Welcome to Rental Republic. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the one, the only Remso Republic podcast. I'm your host, as always, Remso W. Martinez. Go ahead and do me a favor. Go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Remso101. That's R-E-M-S-O-101. Follow me. I'll follow you back that way. We'll go ahead and expand our ever-loving Liberty family. If you're a new listener, and we get new listeners every episode, it's beautiful, absolutely huge, beautiful, you know, all that. We have one mission that we try and do here each and every episode. It's kind of cheesy, definitely a ripoff, but you'll learn to love it if you stick along long enough, which we all hope you will. It's making freedom fun again. It's the idea of individual liberty, free markets, limited government, the concept that you do you, I do me, we don't use the government as a violent middleman, and we can all live peacefully and happily. Common sense for most of you, but these days it seems to be radical thinking amongst most people. And this season, we have a little bit of a theme going on. It's the idea of the disruptors, the creative disruptors in business, in culture, in politics, the people that are shaking the boat, not necessarily, you know, making the wheel from scratch or trying to find a new way to breathe air and, you know, do what they used to do in South Park, where it's like, we need to find a way to eat without putting food in our mouth and all that stuff. No, it's finding new ways to communicate old ideas, finding different methods to go ahead and engage with people. And when it comes to the concept of freedom, the liberty message, it seems like everything should be on our side. It seems like, you know, we live in the most pro-freedom country in the world, yet we have the most regulations. We say we want liberty, but we're always willing to go ahead and double down on the forces of red tape and regulation. And in Virginia, what happens here always bleeds over to the swampland. And I want to go ahead and discuss that message. This gentleman has been on before. He's back by fan demand. Many of you, it's crazy. I'll go around Virginia and I'll meet some of you at different events and places, and you'll say, you know, I had no clue who this guy was until I listened to you, and now I'm all in. I want to join the Liberty Rising movement, which he's trying to bring to Washington, D.C. Ladies and gentlemen, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate and the good delegate from Culpeper, Mr. Nick Freitas. Nick, welcome back to the program. It's always a blast to have you on.
Hey, always a privilege. Thanks again, Remso.
So, need a shameless plug. Many listeners are here today because they went ahead and saw the film American Statesman that we put out back in November. You declared your candidacy in December, and, I mean, the world has not been the same, so to speak. I mean, you're catching national attention. You were endorsed by Rand Paul, great champion for freedom. How have things been so far? How's life been? Because for months I was telling you behind closed doors, Nick, don't do this. Please, for the love of God, don't do this. This is not the time. And then you went ahead and was like, I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. How's life been?
Well, first of all, you need to understand something, Remso, and you should have known this because you're this type of guy too. You tell a Liberty guy not to do something, we're probably going to do it just to do it anyway. Now, look, I have to tell you, if you would have told me we would be at the position that we are right now with the endorsements that we've secured, with the support that we've seen from, you know, multiple different organizations, people, some of whom we never expected to get support from, or we thought it would be a really long haul. And, you know, maybe if we won the nomination, certain people would come on board. And that hasn't been the case at all. It has been just overwhelming, really, the amount of support and the different areas that it's come from and the different and as a result of that, the different conversations that now Republicans are having on particular issues, which I think 2, 3, 4 years ago, maybe you would have heard about it from Ron Paul or Rand Paul or maybe a Mike Lee or a Justin Amash, but you weren't seeing many people talk about it within Virginia. And now a lot of those, not just what we're talking about, but how we're talking about it and the liberty perspective toward issues is becoming more and more prevalent within the political discussion in Virginia. And it's kind of funny. I compare it to, you know, in the old days with the persecution of the Christian church, you know, they had to draw the fish in the sand and that was the signal that you were talking to another Christian. And now we're in a situation where You know, it's like I draw an I in the sand and someone competes the L, and it's like, okay, you're a Liberty guy. We can continue this. And it's really just, it's busting open on the scene. And it's amazing how many people that when you talk about it from the perspective of, again, what is freedom? Freedom is I get to pursue happiness the way that I want, insofar as it doesn't violate your right to pursue happiness the way you want. And it's amazing how many people from how many different factions get on board with that philosophy. So it's been very exciting, and we're really looking forward to the primary and then the general election.
Totally. And the biggest thing that has been really interesting is the fact that people, it feels so strange when I see other Republicans, other liberty-minded people ask me this, but this is the same state where 60% of the Republican primary voted for Ron Paul in 2012. We have many great people. Most of the House Freedom Caucus is made up of representatives from Virginia. It's beautiful. And it still shocks me when I go out and I talk to people and they're like, Freitas, yeah, I guess I like him. But really, what does Liberty Rising mean? And then I just kind of look at them kind of like, what the hell do you mean by that? What does Liberty Rising mean? I think I have an answer. Obviously, your supporters know what that means. But of all the slogans, you could have gone with Make Virginia Great Again, or I don't know what the other buzzwords are right now. But you chose Liberty Rising. And like back during the Tea Party days, oh, wow, this would have been, as I think it was the Washington Post put it, it was another outlet. They called it conservative catnip. They said that you're throwing a lot of Tea Partiers conservative catnip. Beautiful term. But it just seems that now it feels kind of strange because we've gone through so many different challenges under the Obama administration, and we're still trying to find where we are as a party now. You've discussed this when you've come back on the show. Why Liberty Rising, and why do you feel that that makes more sense now than ever before?
Well, I think there's two parts to this, right? One is we did want to send a signal to those people that would intuitively understand what Liberty Rising means. And again, just as kind of a quick synopsis, it really does mean a changing of the conversation back toward those principles of individual liberty, private property rights, free markets, equal protection before the law, right? A lot of these, you know, some people might consider them traditional conservative values or whatever you want, but ultimately it is around that core concept of, look, I get to live my life the way you want, or the way I want, you get to live your life the way you want, and neither one of us are going to use government force to compel the other, right? So everybody that already understands that and is on board with that, they intuitively knew what that meant, and it caused them to take a look at what we were saying. A lot of the other people that were, you know, maybe kind of got it, but wanted to see exactly what I meant for, they asked the question, right? It was, when you put out a statement like that or a slogan like that, you want people to be intrigued by it. And we've seen that, right? We don't have a lot of people coming up and mocking it. We just have people going, okay, what do you mean by that? And it ends up being a great entry point into the conversation about, okay, so what do you value? And what do you think is the best way for people to be able to cooperate and achieve things and really live their life the way they want? And Liberty Rising is about changing the whole dynamic back to the concept of, you know what, government isn't the way to solve all our problems. And the reason why that's so important is because so many people have gotten fed up, again, with the divisiveness, the toxicity in politics. And I always try to remind them, I said, well, that's because we try to use government to solve everything. And when you're going to use violence and coercion to solve things, the stakes are very, very high. We can't just have a civil conversation and then leave and try our respective ways. If we're always going to demand that it's got to be a government solution, well, then expect toxicity, expect divisiveness, because we're forcing people to do things they don't want to do. But if we can just pull back for a second and recognize that there are literally thousands of different ways that we can address problems, creative ways, voluntary ways, cooperative ways, and that government may be a way to address a problem, but if we can remember that it's probably, right, and with few exceptions, probably the least creative, most violent way to solve the problem, and then we can start to focus on all the new, innovative, and great ideas. And I try to stress this to a lot of my liberal friends. It's like, look, I don't disagree with a lot of your ideas or your ways or your approaches to solve a problem. I disagree with the fact that you want to compel everyone else to do it. Why don't you just get like-minded people together, form an organization, a charity, whatever it is, and go start doing it and lead by example? And I think it challenges people that want to solve a problem but are caught in this cycle of always thinking we've got to use government. And then, again, for the people that already understand it, it's like, gosh, you know, thank God we're talking once again about solving problems through cooperation instead of coercion.
A large well, I'm actually more like half of my audience, they would consider themselves either libertarian or conservative. But in terms of like party identification, a majority of my listeners are independents, and I totally get their mindset. And I remember during the 2016 election at the Republican nominating convention, and folks, this has nothing to do with Donald Trump, President Trump, but it really did kind of freak me out when Ted Cruz was giving his speech and he said, we need to go ahead and elect somebody that will protect and enforce and be faithful to the Constitution, and people booed. And I get why some people did that, but I was looking at that along with so many other people I know, and they were like, wait a second, are they saying that we shouldn't? If they believe that Trump will support the Constitution, they should be like, okay, he's my guy. And that moment always stuck with me. It's always been one of those things where I think about it, I just get a little sick, because that always gave me like a dystopian glimpse of what the future in an alternative universe might be if the GOP really just hated the Constitution, which they don't. But we have some people that need, you know, they need to get kicked out because they obviously don't believe that. A local paper, when you were up here in Prince William County, Virginia, they went ahead and said that you were trying to reshape the brand of the Republican Party. And that moment from the convention came up in my head. And I'm like, wait a second, this is supposed to be the party of liberty. This is supposed to be the party of the Constitution. Does it need any rebranding? I mean, obviously it could use some help here and there. But when people say that to you, because I've seen it on multiple different outlets, when they say that you're the guy trying to repaint the image and the brand of the Republican Party, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I think there's a couple ways to look at that. I mean, first of all, what we have to understand is that while a lot of people that are Republicans and elected Republican officials always talk about adherence to the Constitution, talk about individual freedom, talk about free markets, a lot of them have developed a reputation because they've legislated as either big government Republicans or cronyists or whatever it is. And so while the things that we talk about philosophically sound good to people, unfortunately, we've elected a lot of people from the Republican Party that have governed very differently than how they campaigned. And what ends up happening is when a Republican campaigns on free market economics, just for example, or they campaign on limited government and keeping government within its proper role, and then the moment they get into office, they start rapidly expanding government. Two things that happen. The people that are paying attention are like, you lied to me, right? You said that when you got into office, you weren't going to do these things, and you did. So they feel disenfranchised, and they feel betrayed, right? And rightfully so. Then you have another group of people that maybe they're not following politics as closely, and now they start to associate free market economics with cronyism. And I hate the term crony capitalism. There's no such thing as crony capitalism, because the moment you add cronyism, it stops being capitalism. Capitalism is predicated on voluntary cooperation, voluntary exchange. The moment using government in order to coerce or make advantages, we're not talking about capitalism anymore. We're talking about something different. But the left has done a very good job of doing this. And the right, we've really shot ourselves in the foot in the Republican Party in a lot of ways by, you know, governing the opposite of what we said we were going to do. But then the name, the moniker stays, the moniker remains. And so, okay, well, that's capitalism. Well, no, actually, when we expanded that government program when we expanded that entitlement program, we were actually engaging in something that was more socialist or corporatist or cronyist. But now cronyism isn't getting blamed for it. Why? Because it's a Republican doing it. So it's almost double the damage. And I think what we need to do right now is we need to acknowledge within the Republican Party that there have been people guilty of that. And that the answer going forward is not to water down our message. It's to be honest about what we believe, have the courage to explain it, and not just explain it from a heady philosophical standpoint, right? But to provide real-world practical examples to demonstrate the victims of socialism, the victims of cronyism, and talk about how what we want to do is different. But all that goes away if you don't get up and then legislate that way or govern that way. So is it a rebrand of our principles? You know, I don't know if rebranding is the proper term. You know, and I think each state and each locality, you know, they have different impressions of the Republican Party based off of the history within that state. But we definitely need to once again recapture, you know, what I think it means to be a Republican. And that's that, again, that emphasis, free markets, individual liberty, pursuing happiness according to your own definition. And I'll also say this, Renzo, as a Christian, and again, I'm a very devout Christian. I teach Christian apologetics. we also as Christians need to understand that one of the reasons why government has started to do a lot of things that, quite frankly, I don't think it should, is because the church stopped doing those things. We stopped taking responsibility for providing healthcare. We stopped taking responsibility for providing charity. And we ceded that over to government, and now government has grown as a result. The other thing that we stopped doing was we started to decide that it was okay, that there were certain social norms that we liked. So instead of living our lives as an example of why those social norms were a good idea, we decided we would just legislate those social norms. And the problem is that government is not supposed to be taking sides in some of those debates. And when you give government the authority to do so, well, don't be surprised when they change the rules on you. And so now on any number of issues that, you know, again, quite frankly, I feel very I feel very deeply about with respect to being a Christian and being a conservative, but I can still respect the fact that I may feel a certain way about the definition of marriage, but that doesn't mean the government should be imposing a definition of marriage, right? I don't, why does the government even handle marriage? Why isn't that just a civil contract question? And I think more and more you're starting to get traditional conservatives thinking about these questions differently, not from the perspective of government is the mechanism whereby I achieve conservative norms or whatnot, but rather government is the mechanism whereby I achieve liberty and then am free to live out my life in such a way. And if I think it's the right way to live, then I set an example and people are attracted to the outcomes. They're not threatened by government force if they don't live the way that I think they should.
Delegate Freitas, we're going to go ahead and continue our conversation, but first we have to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Folks, before we do that, a quick word from our sponsors this half hour. I'm not a day trader. I'm not an investor. You look at my math grades from high school and they were pretty much a disaster. What if I told you could make your money grow for you while you slept? Make the most gains possible over a long-term period of time with little to no risk. Sounds like a fantasy. Sounds like something that might be a trap, as Admiral Ackbar from Star Wars used to say, but I've got the group that can help you maximize your saving and earning potential. Go ahead and check out joinhelium.com. That's joinhelium, J-O-I-N-H-E-L-E-U-M, joinhelium.com. I'm Remso W. Martinez with the Remso Republic. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Donate with Bitcoin today at RemsoRepublic.com/donate.
Join the Remso Republic on Patreon today.
Hey, that's really good.
Take the show on the go by subscribing to the Remso Republic on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and YouTube. Don't be left out.
Hello, my name is Alex Merced, and I am a libertarian. I invite you to join me in spreading the message of liberty. Come down to alexmerced.com where you can find videos and lots of other media to help educate you about liberty and more. I've also created learneconomicsnow.com as a quick way to show anyone the basics about economics. Libertarian101.com, a great starting place to learn what is libertarianism, how to get involved, and how to move things forward. Intro2liberty.com where you can learn more about how to spread the message of liberty through positive messaging from people like myself, Larry Sharp, and Michael Pickens. And don't forget libertarianpodcast.com, where you can find an exhaustive list of libertarian podcasts for you to enjoy. This is Alex Merced. Follow me on social media such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and more. And thank you very much.
Hey guys, Tim Preuss here, and I wanted to take a minute and invite you to stop over to PreussPodcast.com and give our show a listen. We've got in-depth commentary on the issues that matter to you.
These hookers. Fucking whores are out there.
These hookers, man, I tell you.
Yeah, that's like the most contact I've had with a hooker.
It's them yelling at
them
you.
Them yelling at me on Twitter.
We break down the most pressing issues of our time.
This what? Large lady with, like, tight clothing on. Not appropriately linked tight clothing either.
And we get the most intelligent analysis from friends of ours like Jeffrey Tucker.
You pulled over engine trouble, and what happened?
I don't know. Oh, God.
Seriously, though, we love putting on a show that both entertains and educates. We're growing, and we'd be thrilled if you joined us. Check out PreussPodcast.com for more. That's PreussPodcast.com.
Folks, welcome back from our commercial break. We're going to go ahead and continue our conversation from earlier. The ideas of liberty, the amazing thing about getting involved in Virginia politics is that, you know, you go from Northern Virginia out to Lynchburg and so many other places in this Commonwealth. It's a beautiful state, and it has beautiful people in it. And regardless of whether they are a Democrat or a Republican, I think the biggest thing that 2016 was able to show us, and I think 2017 may have lost that image in people's minds, is the fact that we live in an age of political apathy. You look at over 60% of millennials taken in a recent Reason survey showed that their independence, the first political party that a majority of millennials belong to would be the Democrats. I think it's less than 27% of millennial young people that would consider themselves to be Republicans. Now, since you're going around the state as candidate for Senate, Freitas, what's it been like talking to people now versus before when you were just a delegate? Because now you have to really focus on issues that not just affect the Commonwealth, but the state. And, I mean, you're going up against a guy who was a former mayor, a governor, head of the DNC. He almost became vice president, and knowing Hillary's health, he probably may have been president. The challenges seem big. So what have you heard from people as you've been traveling around recently?
Well, everybody recognizes that taking on Tim Kaine is a huge challenge. But I think there's a couple of things that come up a lot. One is, you know, Tim's been in government, I think, almost for 27 years now. And when he was in Virginia, even though he was very liberal, he had developed a reputation for being a very nice guy. And I think that's probably an accurate description of Tim. When he got up to D.C., it seemed like things changed, not just with respect to his voting record, where he votes incredibly left wing, but his whole rhetoric. He bought right into the kind of the Clinton machine of politics, all the way up to the point where Hillary Clinton was responsible for disenfranchising millions of Democrat voters because it was her turn and she was going to make sure she was the candidate no matter what happened. And Tim Kaine bought into that. And he owes an explanation, not just to voters in general, but he owes an explanation to his own party base that I think are growing increasingly skeptical of kind of the stranglehold that the Clinton dynasty had over the Democratic Party. And I think that goes back to a little bit of what we were talking about before. A lot of millennials and a lot of younger voters, they have a general mistrust of traditional social political institutions. And again, I think Tim Kaine is a part of that institution, is a part of that, again, that kind of the dynastic approach to politics that the Clintons helped create in the 90s and 2000s. So again, you have certain voters that are more, or obviously people on the right have never really been happy with Tim Kaine's voting record, but even people that are more moderate or swing voters are very, very skeptical of the fact that
gone are the days of the Jim Webb Democrats. I just feel they're not even around anymore.
Well, I think they are. They just associate more as independents now. And then you still have some what we used to call Blue Dog Democrats, or like you said, Jim Webb Democrats. I don't think they feel comfortable associating with Tim Kaine anymore. And then on the right, obviously, we look at a voting record that is far closer to Elizabeth Warren's than it was the Tim Kaine anyone recognized from when he was LG or governor. So Tim Kaine's popularity is probably at an all-time low right now in Virginia. So this idea that he's unassailable is completely false. But I'll tell you what, we're not going to beat Tim Kaine by, propping up kind of a cookie cutter Republican or sending in a Republican that's just going to yell louder about the things that we believe. It really has to be about connecting with people on a different level and recognizing that this will be elections now are, the baby boomers are not the primary voting demographic, or they're not the largest voting demographic. That certainly doesn't mean we ignore issues that are important to them, but we do have to recognize that the way we talk about our principles, which I believe are timeless, but the way we talk about them changes in order to make them relevant to the people that we're addressing and the people that we want to represent. So again, I'm very encouraged with where we're at right now. So
what are some of the main policy areas that you've had to really start looking into? Because, you know, going into a Republican primary, of course, you love responsible spending, guns, the whole shebang. But in like a broader scope, I mean, when we look at our foreign policy right now, no one really understands where we're going as a party. We have some that are very anti-interventionist. We have others that believe that we should be bombing Syria every other second. When we look at the monetary system, I mean, we're living in the age of Bitcoin. It's crazy. And then you look at other issues, environmental issues, things like that. What are some of the bigger policy areas that you think you're able to get across to not just the Republican base, but to those more liberty-minded folks that might vote for third party, or those Democrats that are like, you know what, I'm a Jim Webb type of guy, and I just can't, you know, go with Kane at this point?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think in a lot of things when I'm dealing with tax policy or I'm dealing with education policy, we get a lot more into the weeds with respect to that at the state level. So I'm well versed in dealing with those situations and being able to talk about them and being able to transfer a tax principle or policy from the state level up to the federal level really isn't that difficult. So we're able to talk about the same things that I've talked about before as running as a delegate. It's just now we're talking about the federal income tax, and we're talking about how to make it more equitable and how to make sure that people keep more of their own money. Regulatory policy is a huge one. Again, the same problem exists at the state with the ever-growing expansion of the administrative state and regulations which are out there and harming people, right? We have, I forget which book it was where it says, I think it was 3 felonies a day, where the average citizen, every day, if you just look at their typical behavior, they're probably running afoul of some regulation that they wouldn't even ever have imagined existed. So rolling all of that back that's an easily transferable message from state to federal. Where you start getting into federal specific issues, national defense is a huge one. And on that one, I'm sorry, but there's just no comparison between Tim Kaine and myself with respect to addressing the national security problems that we have right now. Tim Kaine has zero military experience. He doesn't have a great deal of international experience. He certainly doesn't understand much about combating counterterrorism or the appropriate way to do it. And when I say appropriate, I don't just mean from a tactical or a strategic standpoint as far as achieving our objectives, although I'm very familiar with how we should be doing that, but also from a constitutional perspective. What are the constitutional mechanisms that we have available to us? And I'll tell you, Remzo, as again, a 2-time combat veteran, you know, Army Special Forces, working by, through, and with indigenous forces and local tribal arrangements in order to achieve our objectives and find common ground. I am so frustrated with politicians that will talk a good game about the Constitution, but then when it comes to sending men and women overseas and putting them in harm's way, they don't have the courage to require a declaration of war or letters of mark and reprisal or at least a more constitutional process for ensuring that Congress and their government is backing the people that we're sending into harm's way. So, you know, again, when we're talking about dealing with counterterrorism, when we're talking about dealing with issues in Syria, whether North Korea, except I'm the guy that's been on the ground in Korea training Korean Special Missions Group. I'm the guy that's been over in Iraq fighting Al-Qaeda and fighting organizations that would later become ISIS. I understand what works and what doesn't work at a tactical level and also at a strategic level. And going forward, we're going to need a national security strategy. And I really compliment Donald Trump on this because there's been a lot of push for him to escalate things in Afghanistan to a degree that I think is ridiculous. And he's really tried to pull back on to, look, our priority has to be United States and United States interests. And when we send people into harm's way, we need to do so appropriately. But we need to make sure that there is a clear and present danger to United States security interests before we tell men and women that, hey, this is something worth dying for. So I think on that issue specifically, there is such a huge contrast between Senator Kaine and myself. And if you look at what this country is currently facing and what the real role of the federal government is, I mean, you choose, right? Do you want a career politician that has really never dealt with these issues, or do you want with someone that spent the first 11 years of their life preparing to deal with these situations and then actually going and engaging in them, not just in the Middle East, but in Asia and other parts of the world? So,
absolutely. I mean, this is not a time where we go ahead and bring on people that thought that the Clinton foreign policy was something that we needed to go with. Because, you know, it's funny. Now the left is saying, oh, we need to – Morgan Freeman said we need to go to war with Russia. Like, it's insane. Like, I don't get where we're going. And I'm not saying that's the entire Democratic base. There are so many Democrats right now that are like, you know what? I think Trump might be doing something good about this. They won't say this in, you know, polite company, but they'll say this to me. They're like, yeah, you know, Hillary may have gone to war, like, the next day. But, yeah, we definitely need this change, and this change definitely comes in the primaries. Sir, God let you go. For those people in Virginia that are saying, hey, I think this is the time where I should really start to pay so much more attention in primaries, where I think those are the real elections, because if you don't nominate people to go to the general that really represent your values, it's just another wasted day. What's your message to those people to get out and understand Liberty Rising is what's going to bring all people, all walks of life, all classes, all creeds, all races to a more prosperous society?
Well, again, I always encourage people, please go to our Facebook, please go to Twitter. We use a lot of social media. We try to put out a lot of videos there about our core philosophy, our policy positions. You can also see us. I mean, I'm making floor speeches. I'm debating these issues in the House of Delegates. And I want people to know that this isn't something I just came up with yesterday to run for the United States Senate. This is a part of my core belief system. So go to our website, www.nickforsenate. That's the letter, or excuse me, the number four, nickforsenate.com. And then again, we have, you know, points that we put out on pretty much every single issue that it has come before us. And so ask us questions. Ask us questions, because we'll put out a video addressing your question. And again, nothing's too small, nothing's too controversial. That you know, I'm not afraid to take those tough questions and to go into those environments that maybe are not traditionally friendly to Republicans, so we can talk about this liberty message.
Outstanding. Delegate Freitas, best of luck as always. Thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, we'll have to get you on again soon as, you know, things really start to march towards that June day.
Thank you. I appreciate it as always, Rimzo. Good work.
Folks, this, you know, when it comes to every election, people are going to tell you, this is it. This is the election. But here's the thing. It's not that election until you start to feel the pinch in your wallet, until you start to feel the pinch in your freedom. I forgot who said it, but somebody said, you don't know how little freedom you have until you start to walk and you feel shackles. We have an amazing opportunity to have liberty rising, not just in the state of Virginia, because many of you aren't even here, but at the federal level. I've been saying for the past couple seasons, you know, focus on the state, focus on the local, but federal matters too. And if you go ahead and watch American Statesman, the Nick Freitas story on YouTube, if you go ahead and, you know, check out his floor speeches, so much more, what we have is an authentic champion for liberty. And this is one of those situations that I believe matters. But you have to go and determine that for yourself. As always, leave us a 5-star rating and review on Twitter. On iTunes. Getting all the .coms confused today. Give us that. Helps us get on those trending charts for news and politics. Spread this message of freedom. And as always, be good to your neighbor. Go out and treat yourself a bit too. And tune in next week, America. I'm Remso W. Martinez. Good night.
Stay up to date with the latest news and updates by visiting
RemsoRepublic.com.
Hey, this is Lloyd Bailey, the Armed Lutheran, host of the Armed Lutheran Radio Podcast, reminding you that the podcast you're listening to is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Check out all the great content at selfdefenseradio.net.